So I guess it's just do unto others before they can do it to you. Let's just kill them all and let God sort them out. Is this what God wants us to do? And the bewildered herd still believing everything we've been told from our birth. Hell, they won't lie to me, not on my own damn TV. But how much is a liar's word worth? And whatever happened to peace on earth? Now you probably won't hear this on your radio, probably not on your local TV. But if there's a time and you're ever inclined, you can always hear it from me. But how much is a picker's word worth? And what happened to peace on earth? But don't confuse caring for weakness. You can't put that label on me. The truth is my weapon of mass protection, and I believe that truth sets you free. And the bewildered herd still believing everything we've been told from our birth. Hell, they won't lie to me, not on my own damn TV. But how much is a liar's word worth? And what happened to peace on earth?
This is Jerry Swanson behind the board. That was Willie Nelson, Whatever Happened to Peace on Earth. Today on Peace Radio, we've got a number of features. We have a new feature coming up toward the end of the hour with interviews of campus organizers and activists. And in Veterans News, we'll be featuring the executive director of Iraq Veterans Against the War. And in the second hour, we're going to feature a local author, Bob Kubala, and a linguist from the University of Idaho, Kurt Queller. And we'll be discussing Bob's book, which is entitled Democracy Unleashed, and we'll get into a further discussion of democracy. And Veterans News.
Sergeant Doherty.
Thank you and good morning. I am an Iraq veteran and the executive director of Iraq Veterans Against the War, and I would like to thank the Progressive Caucus, especially its co-chair, Congresswoman Woolsey and her staff, and co-chair Congresswoman Lee and Congresswoman Waters for hosting Winter Soldier on the Hill presented by Iraq Veterans Against the War. 2 months ago, over 200 IVAW members gathered in Silver Spring, Maryland to submit, listen to, and offer their eyewitness accounts of the occupations of Iraq and Afghanistan and their firsthand experience in the U.S. military. Winter Soldier Iraq and Afghanistan represents a tradition of veterans who, as Thomas Paine said, stand up for the heart of their nation during its darkest hours. We continue our duty to our country and our fellow human beings by offering our testimony to Congress today. The stories you are about to hear will not be easy to listen to, but believe me, they are much harder to relive. We have witnessed firsthand the ultimate violence, chaos, fear, and suffering of war and occupation, and are intimately familiar with the indelible mark that it has left on our lives. These 9 Iraq veterans here today are going to relive memories that they would probably rather forget, but they won't, because they know that the people need to hear their stories in order to understand the way that war impacts people, their families, and their communities. These stories are raw, heartbreaking, and disturbing, but most of all, these are the stories of U.S. veterans' real lived experiences while in our military, supposedly serving for the benefit of this nation and our people. Later today, Congress will vote on whether to approve over $160 billion to continue the occupation of Iraq. Every day that the occupation continues, more men, women, and children will be killed, maimed, or forced to flee their country as refugees. More veterans will return home with lifelong scars, emotional and physical, with little support to help them readjust. Many will fall victim to suicide, to depression, poverty. Later today, Congress will be speaking about the cost of the Iraq occupation in terms of dollars and cents. But for us, we're going to show the real human costs of this war and occupation that are hard to measure with dollar signs. Congress continues to look to their fellow politicians, to pundits, to generals, to see what is happening in Iraq. But rarely are the veterans and active duty men and women themselves, many of whom have served repeated tours, been asked for their insight into what is happening. If the Congress's aim is to know the true cost of the war in Iraq, then you must listen to the testimony of the soldiers, the Marines, the service members who've served during this occupation, and the Iraqi people who have survived it. Today is just one step in the process of listening, really listening, to these accounts. Each veteran who will be offering their testimony today has undergone a review process in order to verify and support their experiences. We are prepared today to testify under oath, but cannot because we're not in front of an official committee of the House, but we welcome and look forward to that opportunity. When I was in Iraq, I saw the devastation that our invasion and occupation had met out upon the Iraqi people. I saw and at times participated in the dehumanization and degradation of the Iraqi people. By robbing others of their inherent dignity, by denying them respect, and by treating them as the less than human other, we ultimately robbed ourselves of our own dignity, humanity, and compassion. When I returned home from Iraq, I was angry and disillusioned, and I had a desire to use my experience for something positive, and I was fortunate enough to join with six other veterans and form Iraq Veterans Against the War in July of 2004. IVAW is an organization of veterans and active duty military members who have served in the U.S. military since September 11, 2001. We have members across the country and overseas, in Germany, in Iraq, and less than 4 years ago there were seven of us, and today there are over 1,200. Our membership has more than doubled in the past year and is continuing to grow. IVAW members stand united around our three goals. The first is immediate withdrawal of all occupying forces from Iraq, a goal that Congress can help us to achieve by refusing to authorize the $162 billion supplemental for the war. Our second goal is benefits and care for all returning veterans, which can also be taken steps towards helping with passing the new GI Bill. And the third goal is reparations to the Iraqi people. So far, there have been no meaningful steps taken by the U.S. government to provide adequate compensation and assistance for the catastrophe we've caused to the Iraqi people. And we are asking that that be made a priority. IVAW is organizing the opposition to the Iraq war from within the communities that have been most affected, namely those of the recent veterans and active duty service members. While many of us have taken off our uniforms and put down our rifles, we're still honoring our duty to stand up for what is right, and we won't stop until we can welcome all of our brothers and sisters home. I thank all of you for attending Winter Soldier on the Hill, and I thank each of our testifiers for their bravery and commitment. And now, this will be our first panel of Winter Soldier on the Hill, and all of our panelists will introduce themselves. Thank you.
And that was Executive Director of Iraq Veterans Against the War, Kelly Dougherty, addressing the Progressive Caucus about a year ago and introducing the Winter Soldier presentations on Capitol Hill. And coming up now, we have a little Three Dog Night.
Oh,
Freedog Night, Joy to the World. This is Peace Radio on KRFP Moscow, Radio Free Moscow, Moscow, Idaho. Today we're going to start a new feature. This is called Radioactive, and it's brought to you by the Social Forum at University of Idaho, and the co-chairs of the Social Forum, Lynn McAllister and Corey Ellis, have gone out and interviewed activists and organizers on the university, and they're going to bring those stories and those upcoming events and plans to us in today and also in future events. So, without further ado, Radioactive.
Welcome to Radioactive,
brought to you by Social Forum at the University of Idaho,
highlighting campus activism for the Moscow community.
Hello, this is Corey Ellis
and Lynn McAllister from Social Forum at University of Idaho.
Today we have two interviews. One is from Cassie Byrne, President of International Affairs Club, and the other is from Aaron Coyle, Vice President of the Soil Stewards.
We hope you enjoy hearing about campus student activism. This is Lynn McAllister, and I'm here interviewing Cassie Byrne, President of the University of Idaho International Affairs Club. Cassie, thanks for being here.
Thank you.
First, can you tell me a little bit about the International Affairs Club, what kinds of things they do on campus?
The International Affairs Club is primarily made up of international studies majors, but we do also have political science and psychology, sociology, history majors as well, who are just interested in international events and different situations on a global basis. So we put on we show a bunch of different movies throughout the year, documentaries regarding different situations around the world, and we also have a hunger banquet that we put on every fall, and we are related with the Martin Institute at the University of Idaho. So whenever a speaker comes in for the Martin Institute, such as the Martin Forum or the Bora Symposium, the club gets to take the speaker out to dinner, just kind of an informal chat session with the speaker, and that has been really rewarding and kind of a networking tool for a lot of our members. So that's about it.
Cool. Can you tell us a little bit more about your upcoming hunger banquet?
Yes. Every November, the International Affairs Club puts on the Oxfam Hunger Banquet. This has been going on for over 5 years now, I'm pretty sure. And what it does is it tries to educate students and community members about global hunger and the disparity in hunger and ability to get food and the basic resources that is rampant throughout the world. So essentially what it does is kind of demonstrates on a really, really visual level how many people don't have enough to eat in the world. So for the banquet, which is on November 19th this year at 6 o'clock p.m. in the University of Idaho Student Union Building sub-ballroom. So it is $3, but open to the public and students. But what it does is people come in and they get assigned a random person. It's kind of like you get to be this person for the night. And a lucky few will be actually served a three-course dinner. And they will get to eat well, and they will fill themselves up and be satisfied after the evening. Another about 40% will come in, and they will be kind of placed among the middle class of the world, and they will be fed rice and beans, but they will probably leave with a fairly full stomach and nothing, you know, to complain about. And then the majority, by far the majority, of the people who come will be seated on the floor, and they will be fed rice, a little bowl of rice, and that will be what they get. And because this is to show that over half of the world actually is living on just about that for an entire day. So it's a really visual representation of how many people in the world are hungry every day. And at least for me, especially the first time I saw it as a freshman here at University of Idaho, it was really eye-opening to see how lucky we are. And that's part of the reason why we put it right the week before Thanksgiving, so that people go home and go, oh, look how lucky I am. I have this table which is, you know, completely full of food, and there are so many people in the world that don't have that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. So how do you think that motivates activism among people who go there? I mean, it's obviously consciousness raising about these
right.
issues. So what does your group want people to do after they go to this hunger banquet?
Well, first of all, the proceeds from ticket sales are donated in part to Oxfam America and the other part to the Moscow Food Bank. So just by paying for your ticket, by coming to the event, you are helping out on the community level and on the national level to help with help feed people for this upcoming time of the year. So that in itself is awesome. And then we also have the links and information for people who are interested in helping with the Moscow Food Bank, as well as Oxfam America and Oxfam International. If different people would like to donate their time or their energy or just a little bit of money this time of year. So if people feel the urge to do that after the event.
Is it mostly students who show up to this event, or have a lot of community?
We usually get a lot of students, primarily students, but we are hoping that we'll get more community members this year. But we usually get a few community members, but definitely the majority is students.
Mm-hmm. This is for Oxfam. How is the International Affairs Club linked with Oxfam? Is this the only event you
This do? Is one of the only events, at least this year, that we're putting on for Oxfam. In other years, we have done more fair trade type things, and Oxfam is kind of dealing with all that as well. So it does depend on the year and what the club is interested in, and also kind of the current events and situation on a global level as to what the club feels like doing and different activities that it can be part of. So,
when does your club meet?
We meet every Tuesday night at 6 o'clock p.m. in the Martin Institute in the administration building on the third floor.
And one last time, Cassie, can you give us the details about your upcoming Oxfam Hunger Banquet?
Sure. The Oxfam Hunger Banquet is at the University of Idaho sub ballroom on the second floor of the Student Union Building on November 19th, which is a Thursday right before Thanksgiving, at 6 o'clock p.m. And it is $3 for a ticket. And tickets can be found at the University of Idaho Commons, as well as from any International Affairs Club member, and at Book People downtown Moscow.
And you can get tickets at the door also?
Of course.
All right, well, thank you so much, Cassie, and we appreciate what you're doing here on the University of Idaho campus to motivate student and campus activism.
Thank you.
This is Corey Ellis from the Social Forum, and I'm interviewing Erin Coyle, who is Vice President of the Soil Stewards. So, Erin, who are the Soil Stewards, and what do they do?
The Soil Stewards is a student-run group for the University of Idaho. It's a organic farming club, and it was founded in 2003, I believe, by just a group of students who wanted an alternative to eating rather than having to eat on campus, and they were interested in organic produce, and given that the Palouse is such an ideal place to farm, that we started with about 1 acre or less, and now we're up to about 4 acres out on the Troy Highway. Yeah, and we've been certified organic probably since 2005. It's a 3-year-long process, so.
When did you become involved with the Soil Stewards?
I got involved last fall. I started out interviewing them for a journalism project when I was still a journalism major, and I was really interested in it, and my boyfriend is also a horticulture major, and so that even he got talking about it, and we're we both wanted to, like, work with our hands and be, like, gain those skills of learning what it really means to be an organic farmer. And so then we just started in the greenhouse planting seedlings, and then I lived up here this summer, and we moved everything out to the farm in June, and then just planted and directly seeded. And I've been, I guess, most involved since January on doing stuff for the farm. And then I got an internship to be outreach and education coordinator. So I've been doing a lot of scheduling events for the farm and talking to... I just recently talked to a nutrition class on how to eat seasonally.
Sounds cool. And so previously you said that you're still actually harvesting stuff out at the farm. What are you harvesting right now?
Well, we've already harvested a lot of the stuff that can... still hold well, like onions. Last week we harvested the rest of the onions we have, which is 200 feet of onions. But right now, all we have left, I think, in the ground are potatoes and carrots, but we're still giving out squash and other things that we've just been storing in the cooler in the ag side and also at the forestry nursery. But we have our carrots, our farm's known for our carrots. They're Nelson carrots, and they are just exceptionally sweet, and they can stay in the ground and survive many, many frosts. And so we have about, 300 feet left to harvest of rows, but we're at the end of, once our CSA harvest is done, which is next week, we're going to have end-of-season potato and carrot sale, which I'm not exactly sure when or where that will be, but I'll be sure to announce it.
Now, you said CSA. Can you explain, what is it? What is a CSA, and how do you, the soil stewards here do that?
So CSA stands for Community Supported Aquaculture, and we have, I think, three to five CSAs in the Palouse area. And it's just when we have, community members, and we have a lot of faculty from the university who are actually our members, but they pay us up front, depending on how much produce they want. We have it broken into a bushel share and a peck share. Bushels can work for a family of 3 to 4, and pecks can work for a family of 2 to 3. And you pay $300 for a peck, $400 for a bushel. It's a 19-week program, so it's about $15 a week. And so you, by buying into the farm, you're assuming part of the risk, because since it is organic and it's a student-run farm, there's always the risk of something going wrong, a crop not coming up, like frost, just a random July frost killing everything. But usually we haven't really had any major problems like that before. And it's a really great opportunity for get community members involved in something like this, and to support your community and local growers, and then just know, then you're kind of forced to eat seasonally, which is definitely ideal. And also, we grow a lot of unique crops at the farm that you can't just find at Winco or Rosars or even the Co-op sometimes, so.
Cool. Very, the University of Idaho has a book this year, which is the Common Read, and it's Bill McKibben's 2007 book, Deep Economy. And in this book, he actually talks a lot about CSAs and the importance of local farming to kind of be more sustainable on the planet, and in especially the United States, where everything is so centralized and we're importing all kinds of foods and everything. So it's a very, very good social activism, the social forum for the community and the university.
And we're listening to Corey Ellis interviewing a member of the Soil Stewards at the University of Idaho. It's 2:28. You're listening to KRFP Moscow. This is Peace Radio. I'm Jerry Swanson behind the board, and I'm going to interrupt the radioactive presentation. It's a 2:31, and I look at the weather. Currently, we're having light rain. The wind is about 8 miles per hour at the airport. It's 39 degrees Fahrenheit, and we expect scattered showers tonight with a low of about 33 degrees. Tomorrow, during the day, mostly sunny with a high of about 53. Monday night will be mostly rain with a low of 38. Tuesday, chance of showers during the day with a high of 48. And Tuesday night, slight chance of showers with a low of 35. So that is the weather. And we're going to continue now with Radioactive Coriolis interviewing a representative of the Soil Stewards at the University of Idaho.
I guess any closing thoughts of how you think what inspires you to continue the Soil Stewards and how it helps the community and the university?
Well, it's a lot of work. Yep. Like, it's a lot of work, and it can be overwhelming at times, especially, like, many, as you know, as being part of a social forum, it's hard to get people involved and stuff. But it's so rewarding. It's, like, one of the most rewarding things I think I've been involved with. And I really strongly believe that having some sort of farming revolution in America is going to not necessarily save America, but having just a kind of reform of education on how to eat properly is going to really solve a lot of the issues we're facing right now from an economic to an environmental standpoint. And so I'm really excited to further my involvement in it. I want to eventually move to a longer growing season area, maybe like somewhere in Oregon, and they're very progressive too when it comes to CSAs. But it's amazing to see people so excited to learn how to farm, and then that can just give them the tools and skills to apply to different aspects of their life, and just it's a nice circle, because it is a lot of work, but it's the most rewarding thing, as I've said again, that I've been involved in.
Excellent. Well, thank you very much for participating in this interview, and we just hope the community can gain a little more knowledge about the social activism at the University of Idaho.
Well, thank you for giving me some time.
Okay, thank you.
This has been Radioactive, sponsored by Social Forum at the University of Idaho.
Social Forum meets bi-weekly on Wednesday evenings. For more information, contact Lynn McAllister at mcal1108@vandals.uidaho.edu
or contact Corey Ellis at elli8199@vandals.uidaho.edu. Be active. Change our world.
Thanks for listening. We'll leave you with some spoken word by Jason Plato Wellman.
Bet you all weren't expecting that. My name's Plato. Thank you all for being here. Thank the speakers and the organizers. And I'm thankful to be here, have this opportunity. I once read that a UN statistic that depicted that one person dies every 6 seconds sick from starvation. It took me 6 seconds to say that line, so one person just died. Ba-dee-da, doo-doo-doo-doo. Now, when a forest is forged for resources by corporations convincing foreign nations with the force of money to turn forest into plantations, genocide the tribe, transform an ecosystem of life to dollar signs, all right, and we can hire the tribal survivors to spray pesticide poisons and fertilizers on the tomb of their old home to grow one crop. Ba-dee-da, now we can shop for cheap bananas, coffee, cotton, corn, coca, cotton, hamburgers that cost a dollar. And remember those tribal survivors? Well, now they're city peasants, and we can pay them to work in sweatshops so we can wear sweatsuits. In our pursuit of loot, we can drive gas tanks full of blood, 10 miles to a gallon in a big pickup. Ba-dee-da, diabetes. Back home, big business wants to grow, but it reaps what it sows. So, industrial agriculture just spoiled the soil, and greed put a patent on a seed. Now more are in need, not helped by these subsidies. Lobbyists in government making money off of it, and they're loving it because they're like, yo, we can sell these crops around the globe. But oh no, the cargo won't go far if the gas is low, when the oil's in the soil. So the cost of life is now on the rise, and with cheap foreign labor, U.S. jobs just got lost, and people are out there wondering, what are we supposed to do? And the unemployment office is conveniently placed right next door to the Army recruiter. Ba-dee-da, doo-doo-doo-doo. So if we want more, we gotta go to war. But if we war for oil, trust my word, we will war for water. Warfare forevermore, welfare from food stamps to boot camp. And now Mother Earth is crying, climate change, species are dying, and people are just trying to live. But they're in debt, disease, stressed until death, y'all. It's either this evolution, or we just start looking for some solutions. Ba-dee-da. So we want revolution. Even if this we I speak of is my ego's me, we want revolution. I want revolution. I ain't afraid to say it as heartbeats of the sun rays. We are dreamers of a new day. Ba-dee-da. And we get our edutainment from street art and the independent media. We don't subscribe to the views of those corporate news. We have no thirst for your cup of fear and hatred, nor your commercialized cup of corn syrup cola. Because we know that television is programming hypnotism. We don't care about celebrity gossip, nor reality television. You see, the revolution will not be televised, nor will the message mutate to make merchandise. Oh no, you got us wrong. We are not mindless consumers. We know who we are. We might be relatively poor, but we're not obsessed with getting rich. We just want to live simply so others may simply live. Ba-dee-da, doo-doo-doo-doo. And we're tired of our tax money buying bullets, screaming fire in Iraq or Iran or Afghanistan or Vietnam. I mean, goddamn. Ba-dee-da, ba-dee-da. And we're tired, and we know that the U.S. is a private company that charges us, the U.S., to print us money, then taxes us for that, straight out of your paycheck. And these are the same fat cat big bankers that are making money off the military-industrial complex, the corporations, and the governments that they funded. Ba-dee-da. So no more. We say it loud. We say it proud. We say it now. No more. No more. Because we don't shop at Walmart nor Wall Street. We do the meet and greet at Main Street. We care about fair trade, not free trade. We shop at co-ops. We barter at the market. We are CSA farmers. We turn abandoned car dealerships into urban gardens. And in the building, we put a free school. And on the roof, we put solar panels that we design. Because we are also studying wind power and tidal power. We form coalitions for peace. We network like mycelium. We go to rainbow gatherings and social forums. We are building, growing a sustainable society that's compassionate. I mean, ba-dee-da, yo. We ride bicycles, we reduce, reuse, recycle. We pick up trash on the street. We smile at strangers going, how's it going, my brother? How's it going, my sister? But these are strangers, but we treat all of humanity like our family. We take care of our family, even if they drive us crazy. Ba-dee-da, we love you. Ba-dee-da. So you can join us. You know it's fun to play. We are some tree-hugging, dirt-worshipping gypsies who love tunes under the naked moon. Because if we can't dance, we don't want to be a part of this revolution. So yes, we smoke weed, we drink wine, we also stay sober, meditate, go to church, donate to charity, laugh with friends, create crafts, make love, create art, play games, work, poop and pee, sleep, eat and die. We are a state of mind. You can find us in Africa, Asia, Europe, Australia, the Americas. We come in all skin tones and shapes, sexes and ages, beyond labels. We are the people. The people. Simple as that. We are the people, 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 the people. Ba-dee-da, doo-doo-doo-doo. So we the people, we have optimism. We have optimism. There is no room for nihilism in our vision. We are not naive. We know the failures of history were the price of tuition to our higher understanding. And we know that we will continue to learn and grow as we progress. And we participate joyfully in the sorrows of the world, knowing that utopia is an illusion. Yet we make contributions toward solutions with the Constitution that each deed, no matter how small, will make a difference and deliver us to ba-dee-da. And we know that democracy is more than voting. It's town hall meetings and letters to Congress reminding them the economy and ecology both come from the Greek word oikoi, meaning home. And we know the home is where the heart is. With the earth our home, we know the worth of life is priceless. We are not scared of an economic crisis. We are survivors. We don't put our faith in leaders. We put trust in ourselves. So we will only support a government that gives us freedom, clean water, simple as that, clear air, justice, health care. And we invite every police officer, every soldier, every warrior of love to join us. We invite every one of you to join us. Now, if you don't want to join us, and you want to stay on the sidelines, well, that's fine. You just might slide behind times. But if you want to stop or oppress us, just know that we view your oppression as nothing more than a test of our endurance. And we have the courage to endure the longest. Peace, love, and understanding is our revolutionary strategy. Because we also know that he or she who tries to destroy others ultimately just destroys themselves. So after all of the world's empires, airplanes, jets, towers and chains, tanks and banks will have crashed and destroyed each other into ashes, we will be here. Ba-dee-da, believe it, where be here. Ba-dee-da, doo-doo-doo-doo.
And that was Jason Willman at the 1912 Center on October 9th at the fundraiser for KRFP as a prelude to Dar Jamil's talk that evening.